Mr. Brennan.
May it please the Court, my name is Evan Brennan, and I appear today as pro bono counsel for defendant appellant cross-appellee Jeffrey Price. Mr. Price's appeal raises two issues: the warrantless search that began the investigation against him, and the impermissible jury instruction that concluded his case. Because of these errors, this Court should remand Mr. Price's case for a new trial. A third issue, Mr. Price's below guidelines but not unreasonable sentence, is raised on cross-appeal by the government. Should his case not be remanded for a new trial, that sentence should be affirmed as substantively reasonable. At the conclusion of Mr. Price's four-day trial,
Does Mr. Price know that if we send this case back for another trial, it's going to go to a different judge? That's the consequence of Circuit Rule 36. Your client got an enormous break from this judge. So big a break that the government has filed a cross appeal, which it almost never does. If this case goes back to a different judge, it would not surprise me at all that it emerges with a much longer sentence. Your client know he's taking that risk?
He does, Your Honor.
You've talked about this with him?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Mr. Price is fully aware of the potential consequences of this case being remanded for a new trial and the consequences for his sentence if that were to happen. At the conclusion of Mr. Price's four-day trial, the district court instructed the jury on the production of child pornography count. The court instructed the jury that in order to find that the images produced by Mr. Price were child pornography, they had to find that they contained a, quote, lascivious exhibition of the genitals or pubic area of any person. Then, however, the court proceeded to instruct the jury in a way that was not supported by the statute and, in fact, could lead the jury to conclude that images not covered by the statute were child pornography. First, the court told the jury that, quote, the genitals or pubic area do not have to be uncovered, fully or partially uncovered, for a visual depiction to be a lascivious exhibition. And second, the court utilized the so-called DOS factors, a six-factor inquiry named after a 1980s California district court case, to define the term lascivious for the jury. There were myriad problems with this instruction, and on the whole, the instruction misguided the jury to Mr. Price's prejudice, requiring a new trial. The problems with the instruction were that, one, it ignored the plain language of the statute. Two, it replaced the elements of the statute with a judicially created test that violates the separation of powers. Three, it hopelessly confused the definition of what is and is not lascivious, and therefore what is and is not child pornography. And four, it confused the issue in such a way that the jury could find that an image was pornographic without finding that it was child abuse, running counter to the Supreme Court's reminder in the recent case, United States v. Stevens.
Did you suggest a more concrete alternative to these fuzzy DOST factors?
Well, Your Honor, our argument is that the statutory term, lascivious exhibition of the genitals, is one that can be understood by a layman, and that the...
I bet a lot of laymen don't use words like lascivious in their ordinary conversation.
Comes up seldom, is what you mean.
Yeah. You could suggest, I suppose, that you just go to a dictionary and the main definition of lascivious is lewd. Now, I bet most people have a firmer sense of lewd than of lascivious. So you might, I had thought, a defendant might propose an instruction that says, you know, if you're having trouble with lascivious, just think lewd. And stop. Did you suggest anything like that?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Price did not suggest an alternative definition for lascivious at the trial court at the trial level. The First Circuit has said in United States v. Fabrizio that lasciviousness is a commonsensical term, and that the statutory standard needs no adornment. And that would be our argument here, is that lascivious exhibition, while perhaps not being used every day by a layman, is a term that a layman can understand.
What harm was done by the more elaborate definition, which was simply stated in terms of a non-exclusive list of factors that the jury could but didn't have to consider?
Well, the harm is that, Your Honor, it hopelessly confuses the standard. And
there's really nothing confusing about this list of factors. It may not be necessary, but I don't know what it is that's confusing about it.
Well, I think primarily the sixth factor, which invites a jury to determine whether the image was designed to elicit sexual response in the viewer. That asks the jury to, that invites the jury to engage in a subjective reading of the defendant's mind, and it doesn't really give any.
Well, that was the whole nature of his defense in this case, as I understand it, that he didn't mean it that way. He meant it as art.
Right. But nonetheless, the when you're instructing the jury on the meaning of lascivious exhibition, that should be confined to the objective indicia of the photo.
Probably
itself.
So. But in the context of this case, I'm not sure what harm there is. You know, maybe we should discourage the use of these DOST factors. But in this case, it doesn't seem to have affected the outcome. There's really no close question on the nature of these photos, objectively speaking.
Well, I think, Your Honor, there were seven images that were handpicked by the government as child pornography out of a much larger collection. And under the DOST factors, particularly the sixth factor, any of those could arguably be child pornography. The issue is that under the statutory definition of lascivious exhibition, two of them were found not to be child pornography by the jury, and several other of those could also, under the statutory definition, not be child pornography. So the harm is that the standard allows almost any image to be prosecuted as child pornography.
That's a grossly overbroad statement. Maybe you want to be more precise.
The issue is that it allows images that are potentially innocent to be prosecuted as child pornography. I think that's the harm here, and the issue is not whether or not with proper jury instructions the jury would vote again to convict on the same images, but whether the jury instructions were improper and allow the jury to potentially convict on non-pornographic images. These factors were presented to the jury as a roadmap to decide whether the images were lascivious and therefore child pornography. And the wholesale adoption of the DOST factors in this manner violates the constitutional requirements of separation of powers because federal courts do not have the power to define crimes.
I don't get that argument at all. I mean, that sounds like an argument that no federal court can ever define the terms in a statute. On that view, saying to the jury, now, ladies and gentlemen, lascivious and lewd are pretty much synonyms. That would violate the Constitution because only Congress can decide what words go in a statute. You can't mean that, can you?
No, Your Honor.
But then why is DOST any worse from a constitutional perspective than the enormous, elaborate framework that is now in the Seventh Circuit pattern jury instructions? It's more than 1,000 pages of jury instructions to help jurors understand what may be difficult to understand terms in statutes. And on your view, I think the whole effort is unconstitutional.
No, Your Honor, I would just argue that by taking a commonsensical term, lascivious exhibition, and again, the mayor...
There's a difference between unnecessary or inappropriate and unconstitutional. We've said, for example, that district judges should not try to define the phrase reasonable doubt, because the more you try to define it, the worse things get. But there are other courts that do have their district judges define reasonable doubt. There's a difference of opinion on propriety, but there's no difference on constitutionality.
Your Honor, I would argue merely that by taking a statutory term that's plain and infusing it with a six-factor test that is taken from a California district court, it's inappropriate and unnecessary. Other courts have noted the confusing nature of the DOST factors. In United States v. Fabrizio, for instance, the First Circuit said that use of the DOST factors results in disputes that led courts far afield from the statutory language and produced a profoundly incoherent body of case law. And in a prior First Circuit case, United States v. Amaro, the court noted that the sixth factor was the most confusing and contentious of the DOST factors, and that in determining whether there is an intent to elicit a sexual response, focus should be on the objective criteria of the photo. The Eighth Circuit in United States v. Wallenfong noted that the sixth factor was unhelpful because the relevant inquiry is not whether the images appealed to or were intended to appeal to a pedophile's sexual interests, but rather whether on their face they appear to be of a sexual character. And finally, the factors run afoul of the Supreme Court's recent decision in United States v. Stevens, which reminded us that child pornography is not on its own a categorical exception to the First Amendment, but rather is a specific example of a longstanding or general category of unprotected expression, speech integral to criminal conduct. The DOS factors, however, allow a jury to come to a conviction based solely on the content of the images, without considering whether the pictures taken by Mr. Price were an integral part of conduct in violation of a criminal statute, i.e., that is, whether they were a product of child abuse. The district court believed that Mr. Price could be prosecuted for what the photographs communicated to him, rather than how they were made.
Nothing in the Stevens decision requires a narrowing construction of the term lascivious to images that depict child abuse. The explanation in Stevens about why child pornography falls outside the First Amendment is because it is the child abuse is embedded in the production of the photography or the images in question. But that's not required as a limiting principle for the term lascivious.
That's right, Your Honor. Stevens.
That's what you're arguing here, though. I think that's an overreach.
Well, I'm arguing here, Your Honor, that by defining lascivious exhibition as the court did, it allows the jury to focus on what the photograph communicated to the viewer or the picture taker, and not focus on the requirement that it be part of child abuse. So the first part of the statute requires that there be...
Nothing in the offense requires child abuse per se.
Right. Well, the first part of the statute tracks with the definition of sexual abuse or sexual exploitation. So if somebody uses or entices or coerces or induces a minor to engage in sexually explicit conduct, that is child abuse and that is production of child pornography. The issue is that by defining the term with the DOS factors and defining the term in the way that the court did here, it allows the jury to focus not on the child abuse part of that, but just on whether there's an image that was sexual and potentially pornographic, or was sexual. So
that's all that's necessary. There is no requirement that there be evidence within the images themselves of child abuse as distinct from child exploitation or the sexually explicit conduct that is required for purposes of a conviction.
Right. The argument here is that by giving the jury this improper definition on lascivious exhibition, the jury is allowed to focus on the images and what they convey and not on how they were made. So
that's what the jury is supposed to be focusing on, the images and what they convey. The crime consists in the images themselves, and to the extent that it's a production-related crime, the production.
Right.
We've got a possession offense here and a production offense, and they both require the same lascivious exhibition requirement. That's turns on the content of what's being depicted in the photographs.
Right, but the problem, Your Honor, is that in defining lascivious exhibition as the court did, a potentially innocent photograph could be defined as child pornography. And it divorces the inquiry into how the production was made, how the photo was made, from the content of the photo.
The definition excludes innocent photographs as you're describing them.
I believe that
the only kinds of photographs that meet the statutory test are those that are sexually explicit, and that's included to, or that it encompasses the lasciviousness element. So it excludes innocent photos by definition.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's part of the argument is that the plain language of the statute, lascivious exhibition of the genitals, would exclude potentially innocent images. But when a court instructs a jury using the DOS factors in the broad way that the court did here, that could potentially sweep up potentially innocent images into the definition of lascivious exhibition of the genitals.
Which one of the factors does that?
Primarily the sixth factor, again, which focuses on whether an image is designed to elicit a sexual response from a viewer. But also the fourth factor, which tells a jury to look at whether or not an image is nude or not, or partially uncovered. And I think those two taken together can allow a jury to look at a potentially innocent image and not look at the conduct behind it and determine that it was child pornography. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Brennan. Mr. Hartzler.
Good morning, Your Honor. Joe Hartzler for the United States. I'm interested in talking about clarifying our position on the standard of review here, because in the reply brief there's a suggestion that a couple of these issues were preserved. And my concern is that it's not fair to the district court to be imposing a de novo standard review on issues that were not raised, not argued, not decided by the district court. The best example is in relationship to the scope of the search, the Fourth Amendment issue, which has not yet been addressed. But we're not arguing that the defendant didn't raise a scope of consent argument below. The problem is it's not the same argument that was raised below. The argument in terms of the scope of consent below was that this search or the consent was not to a search but simply a consent to surrender the laptop. And now Mr. Brennan argues that the scope was limited to allowing a search only by Detective Morrow. That may be a better argument, but that wasn't the argument that was made below. And for the district court to have written a 20-page order on the Fourth Amendment issue and then to find out that this court is going to give de novo to review to an issue that wasn't raised below strikes me as a little bit unfair. I apply the same reasoning to the First Amendment argument. We're not arguing that Mr. Price didn't object to the definition of lascivious exhibition. He just didn't do it on First Amendment grounds. His main objection was the DOS factors, and it wasn't very clear. I think it's a little ironic for the government to be arguing in favor of the DOS factors because, as I see it, they favor defendants. I mean, Judge Sykes, you indicate that the definition, the statutory definition, eliminates any prospect that innocent pictures could be the subject of child pornography, which is probably true, but that sixth factor is tremendously helpful in production cases, as this case shows, where a defendant is claiming that this is artistic or erotica or something of that sort. Or I mentioned earlier the political photograph that was taken during the Vietnam War of the girl that's called the Napalm Girl. Her clothes were shredded as a result of the heat, and she's completely nude. I mean, no one would say or could conclude that that photograph was designed to elicit a sexual response. So it seems that the sixth factor is one that defendants should very much want. And I find it unusual that in a production case, as opposed to a possession case, that we are now in a position of saying, well, the defendant's arguing against these DOS factors primarily because of the sixth factor, which for Mr. Price was that was a hook for his argument. I mean, had he been better represented by someone other than himself, I think they would drive that home during closing argument. So I just don't see the harm of the DOS factors in this case.
Should we discourage their use?
Could you speak again?
Should we discourage the use of the DOS factors as a matter of jury instructions?
No, I got that implication from some of the questions. I think the DOS factors are very good at outlining or giving the jurors something to consider and measure. I think in the area of child pornography, which can be almost explosive, to send photos or videos back to the jury.
So you think the court's committee on pattern jury instructions was mistaken not to suggest using the DOS factors? You have looked, I assume, at what the pattern jury instruction is on this statute, and it is to instruct in the statutory language. There's no suggested addition.
Right.
You think the committee was mistaken?
Well, I think that it's appropriate to do it on a case-by-case basis. The pattern jury instruction, I think, applies to both possession and to production cases.
Yeah, but the pattern manual doesn't say, and oh, in production cases, you should use DOST.
Mm-hmm.
Right? DOST has been kicking around for a long time. This was not a subject that escaped attention.
Yeah, I apologize for dodging your question. I think the DOST factors are very helpful to a jury. I think that the lascivious exhibition...
You're the first assistant U.S. attorney who I've heard say that. I've heard other assistant U.S. attorneys say these are terrible.
Yeah, well,
and they shouldn't be given. What is the view of the Department of Justice as an entity on this subject?
I regret that
it doesn't help us to have different assistant U.S. attorneys singing different songs.
Yeah. I have not consulted the Solicitor General, but I have consulted the Child Exploitation Section, and I believe the position of the Department of Justice Child Exploitation Section is that the DOS factors are appropriate in production cases. I do not know if the other cases you're referring to were possession cases, and I can see it.
No, I can't remember either.
Well, it's a significant distinction. I think in production cases, I'd be interested in knowing, and I also am sorry that I don't know that I hadn't checked with the other districts to see what their position was on DOS factors. But let's address this case. It clearly did not harm this defendant. And whether or not this court needs to reach the question of whether DOS factors should be given in every child production case is probably completely unnecessary. Judge Easterbrook, if you're intent on getting an answer, I can certainly solicit the Solicitor General to find out what the Department of Justice position is on the DOS factors.
Well, the Solicitor General could tell you what the Department of Justice has told the Supreme Court about DOST. The position of the Department of Justice on cases that have not reached the Supreme Court on a subject like this would be developed by the Criminal Division.
Well, I can certainly consult them. But I would guess that the Criminal Division would defer somewhat to the Child Exploitation Section, and I'm pretty confident that I'm communicating the view of the Child Exploitation Section. Let's move to the sentence. There's no doubt that 18-year sentence is a lengthy sentence. The evaluation of the sentence doesn't come down to one factor, but I do think there's one factor that may eclipse all of the others, and that is the 4B1.5 pattern of sexual abuse of minors. And I think you'll be hard-pressed to find a case in which that 4B1.5 sentencing guideline factor applied in which the sentence is so dramatically below the guideline range, which of course was 40 years or 30 years for the production count. We've presented the cases that I found that this circuit has reviewed in the, since Booker, and there's really nothing that's comparable to a 55% variance from the guideline range as we have here.
What significance do you think it has that the Sentencing Commission itself has just released a very long report saying its guidelines are out of whack and that sentences in child pornography cases are too high?
Well, I think that, as I understand it, the reference was mostly the possession cases where we've seen tremendous variances and not in production cases. In fact, the position of the sentencing guideline, I think, in the production cases has been that the research demonstrates that those are the offenses where an offender has had a prior history of abusing a child, they should receive lengthier sentences because of the propensity to recidivate. So there's no question about the controversy regarding possession cases, and I think, frankly, that's what confused the judge or that caused confusion at the sentencing here. The judge seemed to merge the two, the possession and production cases. This was clearly not only a production case, but also a case in which there was a pattern of sexual abuse of minors. That case, I think, makes an 18-year sentence unreasonable. If the court has further questions, I'm prepared to answer. Otherwise, I'll yield the remainder of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Brennan, we appreciate your taking the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court as well as to your client. The case is taken under advisement.